Welcome to this Uvula audio presentation of John Doe and the Cherub by L. Frank Baum. Volume 8. Chapter 18. Highland and Lowland. Once the flamingos were gone, Para Bruin leaned over the edge of the wall nearest the tall houses and gazed downward into the street and said, "What a lovely place to bounce."
"It's a good way down," said Chick. "You'd better be careful."
"Oh, nonsense," replied the bear scornfully. "The higher the wall, the finer the bounce."
With that, he made himself into a ball and rolled off the wall. John and Chick leaned over and saw the rubber bear strike the pavement far below, and then bound upward again. When he was on a level with the top of the walls, he reached out with his paws, caught the edge of the stones, and drew himself up beside them.
"Great, wasn't it?"
he asked proudly.
"Yes, but I advise you to be very careful," said the gingerbread man. "We know nothing of the people who inhabit this country, and if you should chance to miss the wall when you bound upward, you would become a prisoner and be at the mercy of those who captured you."
"That's true," agreed the bear. "I'll be more careful until we get better acquainted. What shall we do now?"
"Let's try to find a way into the castle," suggested Chick. "It's the only way to get off this wall, for I can't bounce like you can, Para Bruin."
"Nor can I," added John. "How strange it is that the island should be divided by this great wall, and how queer to have everything short on one side and tall on the other. But perhaps the people in the castle can explain it all."
They walked along the broad wall toward the castle and presently came to the large entrance gate, one of the wickets of which stood ajar as if inviting them to enter.
"Shall we go in?" asked John, hesitating.
"Of course," decided Chick promptly. "What's the use of staying outside when the door's open?"
So they passed through the wicket and entered a lofty arched hall, built of blocks of exquisite marble, that gave it a grand and majestic appearance. There was a small stairway leading upward, and a large stairway descending to the lower floors of the castle, but no one was in sight to greet them, so they decided to go down the stairs.
"Evidently they did not expect us," remarked Para Bruin.
"This must be the castle of the ruler or the king," replied John. "And perhaps the royal family is at dinner, or the king is holding court."
But at the foot of the stairs they found the hallways and rooms to be deserted, and empty as could be, and their footsteps echoed with a hollow sound upon the tiled floors. The furniture of the castle was magnificent beyond description, and the draperies and pictures upon the walls were of exceptional beauty. Everything was in perfect order, and yet the place seemed wholly deserted. After inspecting the rooms on this floor of the castle, they found another stairway built of polished white marble with elaborately carved marble balustrades. This they descended and discovered that the rooms on the lower floor were even more splendid than those they had already seen. Occupying the entire central portion of the castle was a great marble hall, having a domed ceiling and windows that looked upon the tall city to the east of the wall, as well as the low city to the west. There were also great entrance doors, admitting people from both sides of the wall. But these doors were closed. They were not locked, however, and John said to his companions,
"We know nothing of the honor of this castle, nor of the people inhabiting the opposite sides of the great wall. They may prove to be either our enemies or our friends, so advise that we be cautious until we know what treatment we may expect from them. Two of us should remain here while the third boldly enters into the cities to make inquiries."
"I'll go," said Chick.
"No, indeed. You're too young and too small," objected Para Bruin.
"But I'm just a regular child, while you're a rubber bear, and John Doe's a gingerbread man," said the Cherub. "They wouldn't think anything of my being here, but if either of you two go out, there may be trouble."
"The Cherub is wise for one so young," observed John. Therefore, we will let the child visit the cities and report to us. Having found the castle deserted, we will take the liberty of occupying it until our little friend returns.
So they opened one of the great doors, and Chick walked boldly out into the main street of the high and narrow city to the east. Pacing before the entrance, as if guarding the doorway without, was a soldier, who stood more than 7 feet in height, but who was so exceedingly thin and slender, it really seemed as if some strange power had stretched him out lengthwise. But Chick noticed that all the people walking along the streets of the city were just as tall and slight as the soldier, and Chick quickly understood why the doors and windows of their houses had been built so singularly tall and narrow. The soldier seemed surprised when the cherub emerged from the deserted castle, but he took off his tall hat and bowed politely. His uniform was of blue cloth with brass buttons.
"What place is this?" asked Chick.
"This, beauteous stranger, is the great country of Highland," answered the soldier respectfully. "And this is the great city of High, which you see before you, and the great people you observed are called Highlanders. I don't suppose there is so great and wonderful a country or city or people anywhere else in the world."
"What's the castle called?"
said the cherub.
"We call it the Castle of Hilo. It was the dwelling of the former king of Hilo, who ruled over our great nation as well as over the miserable creatures residing on the other side of the wall."
"But where's your king now?"
inquired Chick.
"The castle's empty."
"To be sure, the castle is vacant at present, for our king is long dead," the soldier replied. "But we're patiently awaiting the arrival of his successor. There's a prophecy that our next ruler will be a king who is just and wise, but not made of flesh and blood. Although this is an impossible thing, our people hope the prophecy will someday be fulfilled."
"Why don't you make one of your own people king?"
asked Chick.
"Because the island is divided into two sections, and one king has to rule both sides of the wall. Of course, we wouldn't allow one of the insignificant Lows to rule us, nor will they consent to allow one of our noble Highs to rule them. Therefore, we must get along without a king until the arrival of the wise and just ruler who is neither flesh nor blood."
"Who are the Lows?"
the child asked. "I've never seen them, my dear, for the Great Wall divides them from our superior nation. But they're said to be short and squat and very disagreeable. They live on the other side of the island."
"Thank you for the information,"
said Chick, and then he turned and re-entered the castle.
"What did you find out?"
inquired John and Para Bruin in the same breath. The child carefully related the conversation with the high soldier and then said,
"Now I'll go into the other city and find out what the people on the other side of the wall have to say."
So John and Para opened the door on the opposite side of the arched hall, and the cherub passed out and came upon another soldier, who seemed to be standing guard at the castle entrance. This one was dressed in a red uniform with silver buttons, and was the shortest and fattest person Chick had ever beheld. But his broad face was smiling in good-natured and expression, and he tipped his low, flat hat gracefully to the pretty incubator baby.
"What country is this?" asked the child.
"This most lovely one is the superb and grand country of Lowland,"
replied the man.
"And this splendid city you behold is the city of Low, and our magnificent people are called Lowlanders."
"What is the castle called?"
Chick inquired curiously.
"It's the castle of Lo-High, inhabited by our king when we had one, who also rules the poor barbarians who dwell outside our paradise, on the other side of the wall."
"When do you expect to have another king?"
asked the cherub.
"Whenever one comes who is just and wise, and is not made of flesh and blood. We have a legend that such a king shall rule us. But for my part, I don't believe there's such a person of that description in all the world."
"Yet there may be,"
suggested Chick, who had been thinking that the description just fit John Doe.
Of course there may be,
agreed the man cordially.
And if there is, and he comes to our island, everyone on both sides will hail him as king.
Looking along the streets of the city of Lo, Chick saw that all the people were as short and fat as the soldier, and that they waddled like ducks when they walked. But they seemed as busy as bees in a hive, and appeared to be happy and contented. So the child could not decide which was the finer country, that of the short people or that of the tall ones. Both cities seemed prosperous, and on both sides of the wall the island was charmingly beautiful. It may appear strange to the reader that neither of the soldiers Chick had spoken with made any attempt to question the child, but afterward our friends found that one of the established laws of the island forbid any of the people to ask questions either of strangers or of those inhabiting the country on the opposite side of the wall. However, they were not forbidden to answer questions properly addressed to them, and by nature both the tall people and the short ones were extremely courteous and polite. Chick decided this queer law was to blame for the misunderstanding between the two nations, for as neither country knew anything at all about the other one, a feeling of mutual contempt and indifference had arisen between them. After the conversation with the soldier, Chick went back to the hall of the castle and told John Doe and Peregrine what the man had said. Chapter 19. King Doe. The cherub told John Doe and Peregrine this. They all expect a wise and just ruler who's not made of flesh and blood. So I guess it's up to you, John, to run this island.
I'm surprised, said Peregrine, that they don't prefer a king who's made of pure rubber and can bounce. But if they want John Doe instead of me, I'm willing to yield in his favor.
You shall be my chief counselor, replied John. Only I reserve the right to act as I please in case I do not like your counsels.
Well, that's entirely fair and reasonable, declared Peregrine. And I thank you for the honor you have conferred upon me.
I'm going to be head boolywag, said Chick gravely.
What is that? Asked John.
It's the one that rules the ruler, said the smiling cherub. So you just behave yourselves, you and your chief counselor, and you'll both find I know my business.
Thereupon the child led John Doe to the king's attiring room, and hunted in the closets until a fine ermine robe and a crown and scepter were discovered. The crown was a little tarnished from lack of use, but the jewels in it still sparkled brightly. So the bear set it upon John's gingerbread head and put the scepter in his right hand. Chick folded the ermine robe around him in such a way that his missing left hand was not noticed, and then they led the gingerbread man to the great hall and placed him on the royal throne. He might have looked more dignified had his nose not been badly chipped, and his left glass eye so loose in its socket that it rolled every which way but the right way. However, the robe concealed the fact that his shirt front was soiled and cracked, and that several lozenge buttons had broken off during his recent adventures. But kingly robes and a kingly crown cover many defects, and when Peregrine and the cherub stood back and took a critical look at their friend, they felt quite proud of his regal appearance. When all had been made ready, and John was seated in the throne, Chick went to the west door of the castle hall and threw it open. At the same time, Peregrine opened wide the east door. Then together they cried out to the people, "The king has come! Enter his castle, all ye highlanders and lowlanders, and greet the new ruler in a fitting manner." So the tall and slender people trooped in at one door, and the short and fat people trooped in at the other, and all gazed with awe and reverence at the strange form of the gingerbread king, who was surely not flesh and blood, and might easily be a wise and just ruler. There was no disputing the fulfillment of the prophecy, so all bowed humbly before John, whom Chick introduced to his subjects in a shrill, childish voice as King Doe the First, ruler of the twin kingdoms of Highland and Lowland. Afterwards there was feasting and rejoicing in both cities, and John made a royal procession on both sides of the great wall, being everywhere received with shouts of enthusiastic joy. The gingerbread man proved a very successful ruler, and as neither he nor Perebruin ate anything, and Chick returned to a diet of oatmeal and cream, the king's expenses were very light, and he was not obliged to tax his people to support his royal state. One of the first laws he made was that no one in the two nations should eat gingerbread that was more than 3 days old, under pain of death. This prevented his ever being in danger when he traveled in either land. Another thing he did was to engage a fat little woman of Lowland to make and bake him a new gingerbread hand, having 5 excellent fingers at the end of it. Also, she made gingerbread patches to fit his broken ear and his crumbled nose and his damaged heel, as well as some lovely new coattails. And when the hand and all these patches were placed where they belonged, John drank the cordial contained in the silver flask that the beaver fairy had given him, and at once the new gingerbread became a part of his body, and he was as perfect as the day he had left Monsieur Jules' bake shop. The woman also repaired his frosting and fastened some new lozenge buttons to his waistcoat, after which John presented so neat and respectable an appearance that all his people were very proud of him. Perebruin also became a great favorite of the two cities, and the tall and short folks loved to watch him stand upon the high wall that divided the two nations, from which he would leap to the ground and immediately bound back again to his station on the wall. He was always good-natured and cheerful, quite winning the hearts of the Highlanders by poking fun at the Lowlanders, and afterwards delighting the Lowlanders by jeering at the Highlanders. So Perebruin's life was a happy one, and for countless years he remained the close friend and companion of King Doe the First, the popular and worthy ruler of Highland and Lowland. The records of the kingdom say very little of Chick's later history, merely mentioning the fact that the king's most valuable assistant was the head Bullywag, who grew up to be the especial favorite of all the inhabitants of the islands. But curiously enough, the records fail to state whether the head Bullywag was a man or a woman. The end. This is your narrator, Jim Campanella. We hope that you've enjoyed this Ubula Audio presentation of John Doe and the Cherub by L. Frank Baum.
The opening MIDI theme was the old standard, Come Fly With Me, by James Van Heusen. And the closing theme was the Bart Howard favorite, Fly Me to the Moon.
Please feel free to write us and tell us what you think at uvulaaudio@uvulaaudio.com. You can also become a Facebook fan of Ubula Audio. Just do a search for Ubula Audio on Facebook, or you can do it from the main Ubula Audio webpage. As usual, check out our Cafe Press website for t-shirts, etc. For other Ubula Audio titles, please go to our website at www.ubulaaudio.com. We are listed on iTunes, and you can subscribe and download our podcasts for free from there. If you like our podcast, please feel free to tip us whatever amount you may like using the secure PayPal links at uvulaaudio.com. From all of us at Uvula Audio, we thank you.